Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the Scott McKenna Podcast. I can't tell you how much I appreciate each one of you that listens to this podcast and connects with me on Twitter to let me know that you're listening. Thanks, as always, for just taking some time. Hopefully, this will be valuable to you. That's always my goal, and I appreciate all the feedback when it is, because it helps me know that it is actually making an impact to you. Also, I would love for you to go to the iTunes store and rate this podcast. If this is one that you enjoy and you think other people would enjoy as well, please give it a 5-star rating and tell people what you think about it. It really helps this channel grow and this podcast grow, and that is just a super exciting thing for me, because the more people connected with the podcast, the more people that I can hopefully have impact on and allow the other people that speak into this podcast to have impact on as well, because I think that there are just some great valuable points that a lot of these guests bring out. So make sure you do that if you have not already. Today's episode is exciting because for the first time, we actually have a female wedding videographer, which is awesome. And not only is she a female wedding videographer, which is a first for this channel, but she's also a wedding videographer from Italy, which is also a first in this channel. So we got into some cool conversation that talks a little bit about kind of the wedding film market in Italy, which is a little bit different than the United States, obviously, but there are also a lot of similarities, which were surprising to her, and I think would probably not be surprising to so many of you, because weddings are weddings. They are difficult, and we get into that discussion a little bit. We also talk about gear. She's a gearhead. She's really good at what she does, and I really hope you get a chance to check out her YouTube channel, connect with her on Instagram, say hello, tell her you heard her on the podcast, and just thank her for being here. So let's just jump right into the interview. Her name is Sarah Canducci, and I will talk to you guys right after the episode. Well, Sarah, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Appreciate you taking some time today. First of all, just I always like to start every conversation to at least give a little bit of context of kind of who you are, what you do. Tell me a little bit about yourself. I'm going to link, obviously, all your channels and everything below. But just first of all, how are you doing today?
I feel a little bit tired just because it's 10:30 pretty much in the night. You know, we're recording, but, you know, I'm from Italy. So, you know, dealing with time zones can be tough sometimes, but we're here and technology is amazing. So that is the reason why we're here.
Yes, I'm glad we're finally be able to make this work. It is difficult with the time change because the times that are convenient for both of us are completely the opposite times. But I'm glad we're able to do it. And thanks for staying up a little later to make this happen. And we were talking a little bit before we started. You are from the place where lasagna originated. That's an amazing thing. So thank you for that. If you were part of making that happen, I love lasagna. And so does my wife. And so thank you for bringing that into existence.
Who doesn't love lasagna? You know, that is the greatest gift that my region, Emilia-Romagna, actually gave to the world.
Yes, it is incredible. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You are one of the reasons I wanted to obviously have you on the podcast is because you're very talented at what you do, but you're also a female. And first of all, I've never had a female on the podcast. So thanks for first of all, making that happen. But you're a female filmmaker. And I feel like this is an industry that is way, way, way too male heavy. And so I really wanted to talk with somebody who's doing filmmaking, basically doing the same type of stuff that I do, but in another country, in a very different part of the world, very different culture, everything's different. And I kind of wanted to just get some context of how you kind of got to where you're at today and what you do, and tell us a little bit about your studio and how you started.
Actually, I was born in 1994, and my dad has always been a filmmaker. So, you know, he was one of the first, like, wedding videographers here in my area. Also, he was one of the first freelancers, because we actually were talking about this before the podcast, but you know, Italy is a little quote-unquote conservative on this. So freelancers are not a real thing yet. You know, it is one of those things where you work only if you have a 9-to-5 office job, you know.
So it's kind freelancers of
Are still pretty rare. So can you imagine my dad being a freelancer back in 1994? So anyway, he was a wedding videographer. So I grew up in that area and my house was always full of cameras and stuff like that. But honestly, I never really thought to grow up into a filmmaker. You know, that happened by chance. I started out as an application developer, you know, iOS app developer, which is something that is not really connected to the field. But, you know, after that, you know, I started a YouTube channel just to talk about my applications.
So what were those applications? What? Because I did see some on your channel, but obviously I don't have a clue what you're saying in any of the videos. So I'm just kind of looking at them and saying, the video looks great. I have no clue what the actual application is about. So what were the actual apps that you created? Like, are they still in existence or what are they?
Oh, well, actually, the applications are not available anymore. I mean, okay. I'm talking about stuff that happened when I was 17. Now I'm 24. So, okay. Well, it is a little while ago. I feel old right now. Very old.
Wow, you feel old at 24 years old. You and Pablo both 24 years old. You have another whole story. Too much life left to live. I wish I could go back to being 24 and have the knowledge that you guys have now.
But anyway, I was trying to promote my applications, and that is how I actually opened my YouTube channel. Then after a couple of years, I was like, huh, what about, you know, moving to the US? It would be nice. So I tried to get better with my English. And honestly, I did not study English. I, you know, started watching a lot of Netflix and YouTube reviews and stuff like that. And that is how I actually came across a lot of video related channels like Craig Adams or Fenchel and Janish, I think you can say that. So I started working in that area by chance, by, you know, trying to move to the US. And during that time, a photographer in Italy was like, Sarah, what about, you know, recording videos for weddings here in Italy? And, you know, I was looking for a full-time job and I was like, let me try that.
Why not?
Maybe it will work, maybe not. But anyway, I was like, okay.
And when was that?
Summer 2015, 3 years ago, pretty much.
Okay.
So I started and, you know, the couples were kind of happy with my work and I fell in love with video since then.
So before then, before that first wedding, you kind of just had dabbled in video. You weren't really getting, when did you kind of start getting heavily into knowing that you wanted to do it? Because we talked for a little bit. Obviously, your dad had the background in it, but
yeah.
You didn't necessarily grow up filming stuff, right? You
kind of Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was a little kid, so I was obviously interested in, you know, filming video. And, you know, actually, I bought myself my first camera, like a mini DV camera, back in 2004, I think. I was 10. For my, I think you can say, first communion. So, you know, my parents and also people in my family were like, Sarah, what do you want as a gift? And I was like, give me money. And with that money, I actually bought my first camera. I think I still have that, but I don't actually remember the model, but I still have it somewhere.
I remember
in
the
my
mini
house.
DV days. That's as far back as I go to. I really wasn't into video before even mini DV, but that was a terrible time even in itself.
So my dad at that time actually taught me how to use Premiere, and I think it was the Pro 6 whatever, you know, with the horse, like the black horse
the
cover.
A while ago.
So, yeah, a while ago. And, you know, I was editing and I was having a lot of fun. But again, I never really thought about becoming a full-time in that area. Like I was thinking, you know, to become maybe a computer programmer or something. I mean, I've always been a geek girl, you know, so I've always had a lot of passions around, you know, tech and stuff like that. So I was,
which is super rare. It's you don't find many girls that actually are into any of those three things you just mentioned, like tech, camera, all that kind of stuff. Which is, I guess, why it's kind of a very dominantly male profession, filmmaking. Like you just don't find many females. There are tons of female wedding photographers, but there's very few females in the videography field in general. And then in the filmmaking field, especially, there's just not many. Maybe you could go back for a second before you started. So when you did that first wedding, when someone said you should try doing wedding videos, how did you get your very first wedding? Because that's the question everybody wants to ask me all the time. How do you get your first wedding? And I think every area is so different and everyone's approach is different because sometimes it falls in your lap. Other times you decide you want to do something, but you have no clue. What was your experience like in that?
Oh, actually, I booked my first wedding being my crazy self, which till this day is still my major way to get clients. Like people like book stuff with me, like weddings or commercial corporate stuff, because they see me as part of the package, you know. I'm like the added value of what I do. It may sound crazy, but that is just the truth. Like, I was in New York in 2014 when this photographer actually, you know, wrote me on Facebook saying, hey Sarah, what about, you know, making a collab together and shooting, you know, wedding videos. You know, I was having fun in New York and I was shooting pictures with my Nikon D800. I was, you know, classically, I was walking by Manhattan. I was taking pictures. I was posting them on Facebook. And that is actually how this photographer saw my pictures and said, hey, what about, you know, doing a collab? And that is actually how I booked my first wedding. So actually, the couple wanted to see, you know, obviously, some videos, just, you know, to make sure to...
Yeah, that you actually knew how to do it.
Exactly. So I actually sent them a couple of videos that I was shooting in New York. Like, I basically was one of the first daily vlogger, kind of.
Okay.
You can still find my vlogs around New York from 2014 on my channel. Delete them, so...
Awesome.
And in these vlogs, you can clearly tell that I'm crazy. Like, I'm running around and doing crazy stuff. That is why I said that I booked my first wedding being my silly self. That is the reason.
And people don't realize, you know, I talk all the time about how important it is to be, you know, networking and making friends and being a person that people like. It doesn't matter what business you're in. Being a person that is friendly and easy to talk with and that people like will make you succeed in any business, no matter what you do. And I think people also try to over professionalize everything they do. And like the idea of you having silly videos still on YouTube or of your crazy self or whatever it is, it's a good thing for business. Like it brings you to a point of like, you're actually a human being and you're not a machine that operates in a business only form. And I mean, that's what I try to do a little bit more with some of like Instagram and Snapchat and different places where I kind of don't always have the polished stuff on there, because people like to connect with people. And once they like your work, or especially if they're looking at a bunch of different people's work, they sometimes connect way easier with just the person. And that's really what sells them before anything else. And that's a huge, I mean, you're spot on. I mean, that's how you can get a lot of your first work, is just being a person people like, and people will naturally be like, huh, I'll book you. Okay.
No, but anyway, seriously, what you said is so true. Like, a lot of people, you know, think that you should be quote unquote professional, which again, it is true. Like, but being yourself and being professional are not different things. Like, you can be a professional person, you can know what you're doing, but also at the same time being genuine. So people tend to say, well, you shouldn't like joke with your couples, or you shouldn't be silly with clients. Obviously, it depends by the person that you're talking to, and right, it depends by the context, but you know, it is okay to be you.
Yeah, like you said, you have to know the couple. You have to know certain people you're around. Okay, I can tell that there's not a big jokester. That's fine. Let's keep it. And there's a fine line between being like an inappropriate person and non-professional, yes, versus just having a good time. People like to have a good time. And especially when you're filming weddings, these aren't actors or actresses that are used to this. Like, everything's so awkward to them in the first place because they're never on camera, that the more you can do to break down walls of like, this is not a film shoot, this is your wedding, let's have a good time, they, yes, will be so much better on video.
And also, you know, it can be tough with shy people because it happens to deal with, you know, shy couples, and that is how I actually created my quote unquote silly laugh. I'm famous for that, which is like, oh, <it's something> I immediately start like laughing, fake laughing, like, oh guys, say cheese, and they
and that's start your signature laughing. Now.
Yes. You know, that is the crazy sauce, the secret sauce.
So let's talk a little bit about wedding, the industry, the video industry specifically in Italy, where you're at. It's obviously, I assume, different than the United States, yes, on a lot of aspects, but like any country or anywhere in the world, weddings are weddings. Talk a little bit about kind of your industry. What has changed over the last couple of years? If you know a lot about the US wedding industry? How different is it? What are some of the big differences that you see there compared to here?
Well, the main difference I feel is connected to the kind of relationship that you have with couples. 2018 is going to be the first year, at least for me, where I will have the pleasure to work with people and couples that are not necessarily 100% Italian. So I will tell you how it goes, maybe at the end of the season. But honestly, the main thing that I actually see is that, you know, especially when you have to deal with American weddings, you see the couple paying a lot of attention to photo and video. They have a different attitude. In Italy, what can be tough, especially for us as videographers, is time. Okay, so let's suppose that we have an afternoon wedding. So we have a ceremony like at 4 p.m. The groom gets ready pretty much at 1:30 p.m. And the bride gets ready like at 3 pretty much. And what can be tough is the, you know, very short time range, time zones that you have. I don't know how to say that, honestly, but it can be tough because you have no time to shoot the right things in the right way, or, you know, to shoot stuff as you would imagine in your mind, because we're all filmmakers and, you know, we're perfectionists and we look at other people's stuff and we look at those fancy American weddings. At least in Italy, we all like watch American weddings and we're like, oh, amazing, beautiful, bellissimo. And we kind of want
that's because you don't see 99%
that
of them that are at the Best Western Hotel.
Exactly. And the problem is actually that you don't have time to shoot stuff properly as you would love to. And the real problem is, especially after the ceremony, actually we don't have like custom vows, like we don't have letters. So we don't have first look, which is unfortunate because it's so beautiful. So no letters, no first look. Generally, we always have ceremonies inside churches, which again can be tough with different color temperatures and stuff like that. And people that want to use external lights or not, and photographers using flashes.
Everything you're saying is not Italy. That is every wedding in the
entire
universe.
In the world. Amazing.
Yes, everywhere you go has those same issues that has to do with time being only so much. There's very limited time. And situations not necessarily being ideal. And that's what makes wedding filmmaking so incredibly hard. It's the only thing that you literally don't have any control of. And then you're expected to make something beautiful out of it. And people see your best work online from your chosen best weddings and expect theirs to be the same when they don't necessarily know that more time went into this or time went into that. That's why it's such a hard industry.
Awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. I'm so happy because
yeah,
I mean,
all that stuff is same in the US. We have first looks, but I would say 30% of our weddings have first looks. The other 70 don't.
Okay.
So it's all nothing's very different. And that's what I think it's important to know, like whether you're in Italy, whether you're in other parts of the world, whether you're in other parts of the United States, weddings are weddings. They are someone else's day that you didn't plan. It doesn't always go as planned. And that's that's just what's difficult about it.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that. At least I know that all the glamorous stuff is not that glamorous after all.
No, there are obviously great weddings. You have a few a year that obviously work really, really well. And then there's some venues that are obviously better than others, but not every wedding's that way. And especially what can be frustrating for people starting out is that if you look at other people's work, especially the best of the best in the United States, do not expect that is what your weddings are going to look like when you start, whether you start in the US or anywhere else. You have to, I say the best way to learn and the best way is to just evaluate the last wedding you did and make the next wedding better than that one. Because if you compare yourself to the best of the best, that's just a silly thing to do. There's nothing that comes out of it positive, because don't look at someone's best highlight reel and then look at your wedding that was just average when 99% of weddings are just average. There are 1% that are really, really, really good. And those are the ones that are online a lot from these high end people.
I decided to start this journey with one thing in mind, one goal in mind, which was to create the best job possible, you know, produce the best videos possible with what I've given.
That's right. It's one thing if you're doing commercial work or you're doing something where you're choosing the location scouting and you're choosing the script and all that, but that's just not the wedding industry. The thing that I always try to keep in mind that helps me kind of not be necessarily as discouraged on certain days that don't go as planned is if I don't think the venue is beautiful, or I don't think the bride prep area is beautiful, or I don't think that the ceremony is beautiful, you have to keep in mind that they chose those places. And they're not going to look back at their video and say, why does the venue not look good? If the venue didn't look good. And you got to keep in mind that even though it may not be great to you and it may not necessarily be what you thought was the best wedding, they're not looking it through the eyes of a filmmaker that compared it to the best wedding they've ever seen. They're looking at it as, this is my wedding and it's so beautiful. I think this is the best thing I've ever seen. That's true. What I think people forget so many times is just that they don't look at it through the eyes of how we look at it. They don't look at it and say, look at that incredible drone shot. Half the time, they could care less about drones. The stuff that we overemphasize and the things that we critique of the color and the little details of this, and I should have shot this in 60 frames or 24, they don't know any of this kind of stuff. They don't care. And I think the ones that also overemphasize that stuff, I think sometimes are actually delivering films that are beautiful cinematography with no story. And what good is that doing for a couple to remember their wedding day either?
Yes, definitely.
Like, great, you have an amazing drone shot that's following them down this incredible ocean sand, but like, does that really help them remember every aspect of what their day was? It's just important. I say it all the time. It's just important to remember who your client actually is, who's paying you.
Exactly. And that is also the one that can make a referral for you and for your company, for what you do.
Yep. They chose the places. And so you never have to overthink whether the place was great or not because they chose it. So in the filmmaking industry, I don't know how different it is in the United States versus Italy, but from a female wedding videographer perspective, do you feel like that has disadvantages or advantages in a wedding industry to be a female? I personally think, and I only say this because I started my company with my wife and I being the two shooters, and I know that they loved the fact that I had a female in bride prep, and I wish I still did because I don't like being in bride prep because I just get bored because it's just a long day. They always loved the female aspect of that, and I feel it's a huge advantage if you obviously are good at what you do in a female perspective, that's a huge advantage in the wedding industry. Do you feel that?
Definitely. I 100% agree. Like, you know, being a female in this industry is such a positive thing because I'm kind of, quote unquote, the new thing out there because we don't have a lot of filmmakers, like female filmmakers. And you said that it is pretty much the same in the US as well. So, you know, when people see that I'm the one actually thinking the whole thing and editing, and plus I'm very young, I'm 24, I just turned 24 last week, and I don't even look like a 24 years old. So people actually see me and not really tall. So people see me and they're like, oh, how cute.
You're almost like not intimidating at all to them, that it makes them feel even more comfortable.
And especially in bride prep, as you said, you know, when the bride gets ready and she is stressed, obviously she's stressed, she relies on you and she's like, Sarah, please help me. Help me with this and help me with that. What do you think about the dress? And even if she looks terrible, you're like, oh my gosh, you're beautiful. I've never seen better looking bride than you.
Yeah, and you also have the advantage, I feel like, in the edit, in the manner that, like, my films don't go out until my wife comes and looks at them and approves them because she is my target market. I'm never trying to sell to a groom. That's never who calls me. A bride is always who's interested in video. The groom's always just whatever she wants to do. So my target market is the bride. My target market is your age bride and younger, because that's the average age. So I feel like, too, in the edit, it gives you an advantage because she used to do some of the editing, my wife, earlier in our stage of when we did that. And I think that there's an advantage, too, because you understand from a female perspective, like, what will they like? Like, you understand their emotions like we don't. The things that might not necessarily be important to us are going to ring a bell very differently, I think, with you.
Unfortunately, that is 50% true. That is 50% true because, as we were saying before, I look at that with different eyes. Like,
true. Yep.
I'm still a videographer and I'm still kind of a quote unquote tomboy on this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm 50% female and 50% male filmmaker nerd inside. So, you know, before actually delivering a video, I usually call my mom, which is my mm-hmm. personal assistant. She's 51, but I like to say that she's my intern. You know, she's actually the one shooting with me videos like commercials and weddings.
That's awesome.
She's always on my side. Cool. And that is beautiful. Like being a two women team is so amazing. Like people love it. And
yeah,
even though
cool.
she doesn't actually film, people are like, oh my God, the two videographers. And she's like, I'm just carrying bags. And people call me videographer.
That's so funny. Hey, it's better than being called photographer. That's what people, the amount of people that come up to me and say, oh, can you take my picture?
Oh, well,
and
that
I
is
say,
the same.
I actually stopped even saying that I'm the guy that does video. I just say, yeah, all right, ready? 3, 2, 1, perfect, looking good. But I don't even take a picture. So yeah, I think that it's not that I think it's an unfair advantage as a female, but I think in a wedding side of it, I think that it is a huge advantage if you are a female, because you definitely can connect with them like males cannot.
Yes.
On the day of the wedding, and you can get them to feel more and more comfortable, which I think is huge. The bride is the main client. The
yes.
groom, 90% of the time, could care less about anything. If the bride's happy, the groom will be happy. So that is definitely something cool. Now let's talk about the other side of it though. Do you feel it's a advantage or disadvantage as an overall filmmaker in the industry outside of weddings? I don't know how much of your work is based outside of weddings as well, but I imagine it's not necessarily as much of a huge advantage as it is in the weddings outside of it. What's that like in Italy or in general from your experience?
Actually, it is a positive thing for me because males tend not to confront another female. So if I say something and they're like, I think I don't like this. And I'm like, do you don't really like that? Can you tell me why? And the guy, even if he's the client, like stops immediately talking and, you know, says, you know,
out of respect.
Right. Yes.
You're right, Sarah. You're right. I won't say anything else. That's funny. I think you're also probably one of the rare like female filmmakers / videographer, whatever we call ourselves these days, that I think you also seem like you're very confident in what you do, which is a huge deal. I think that too many people, male or female, one of the biggest failures that they have is the fact that they just aren't really confident in the work they're doing. And that shows. And I think from your personality, just from obviously talking with you and seeing your YouTube channel and everything as well, it seems like you're comfortable in your skin as a female filmmaker, as a female wedding videographer, as just a female confident in the work that she's doing. And you do beautiful work, which obviously helps that. But what are maybe some pieces of advice you could give to a filmmaker, not just female, but male in general, if you're kind of at the starting point in your journey, looking to kind of do what we get to do full time now, which is an amazing thing. It's so much fun, but there's work involved. What are some things that you've kind of been learning in your last 3 years of this journey as a videographer?
Well, the first piece of advice that I can give new filmmakers is to, you know, never stop doing stuff. Casey Neistat actually started talking about this, you know, making vlogs every day. And I know that making a vlog is not technically, you know, super professional, like in the filmmaking, you know, industry or in the filmmaking, you know, mind. Being persistent at doing something and getting better with it is a good training for your mind and for your editing / video editing skills. Uh-huh. That is so important. Another thing that especially at the beginning we all get wrong is to imagine our stuff to be perfect. So uh-huh. we never actually deliver like videos or even testing videos because we just want them to be perfect. And the entire thing, as you said before, is to do something that is better compared to something that you already did, learn 100%, watch a lot of YouTube videos. And actually, I have friends that, you know, are trying to start out in this industry. And they're like, Sarah, help me. What should I do? And I tell them, you know, you should do this and that. And they're like, huh, I don't know. I mean, that is a good idea, but, you know, with buts, you will never go anywhere.
You just got to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You should look at the market and see what people really want from videographers and from the industry. So people love emotional stuff. Okay, go out there and shoot something that is emotional. Okay, but I didn't have a slider. Okay, so shoot it with your tripod. Okay, but you don't. I just want drone shots. Okay, but if you didn't have a drone, do the best with what you have right now.
Yep, neither did I when I started. Neither did you when you started it. Neither did people in the 90s, and they still made businesses.
Exactly.
Yeah, people are just full of excuses. People will make excuses for anything they can, because the honest truth is excuses are easier than doing something. Yeah. That's why people do it.
And also, you know, you can also have the greatest, like, equipment, the greatest gear, the greatest tools, even a Red Dragon, which is, you know, the holy grail for us as nerds and videographers. But if you don't know how to actually use it, if you don't know what is framing, if you don't know, you know, the basics, you will never get, you know, that amazing result.
You can do a lot with a little.
Thank
people
you.
Just over people. Yeah, people just overthink everything. Yeah, I think too, we sometimes get so spoiled in how good gear is that we actually lose the desire to have good technique and do things well. Because I know that, like, I shot all last year's weddings, or not last year, it would have been 2016's weddings. I shot almost all those weddings with an A7S II at that point, that, you know, that was so good in low light, everything was fantastic. But what I actually realized when I look back at those weddings is that because it was so good in low light, I never used lighting, I never did anything. And I look back and I hate the way it looks. And then when I went to the GH5 and realized, okay, it wasn't as good in low light, it made me actually use light. And I love my films so much more now than I ever have, because it actually made you realize, like, the importance of actually lighting things correctly, and the difference that light makes. That is not about that your camera can do incredible things. It's about well-lit, well-composed things always is better than a camera that can just do crazy things. And I think that I got lazy with the A7S II, and I think a lot of people do. They just want the best low light camera ever so that they can shoot in darkness. Well, just because it can shoot in a high ISO doesn't mean it's going to look good.
Definitely.
And actually, just knowing what you're doing, you can do a lot with very, very little gear if you actually know what you're doing.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about gear, because you're a gear person. Which I always love getting into some gear talk briefly. What's kind of your gear right now? What do you use?
Well, right now I'm so pissed off with Sony. Let's just say that.
Welcome to the club. That's why I don't have them anymore.
Like, you know, I was one of the early, like, adopters of the A7S II, because I started filmmaking in 2015 with my Nikon D800 that was shooting, you know, full HD without, you know, the cinema profile. Of course, I was, you know, putting the contrast at the lowest value possible and all that crazy stuff that we used to do with the Canon 7D
Try to get flat.
Yes. So, you know, it was a full HD, 30 frames per second, and I wasn't happy with the result. I mean, I loved that camera from a photo side, but, you know, I wanted slow motion and I wanted 4K. For freaking K. I wanted 4K, and I was pissed off because, you know, the GH4 was out, and, you know, Nikon wasn't releasing new models for the D800. They came out last year with the 850, and I was like, see, you had to release that 2 years before.
Yeah.
So anyway,
well, they've always done really well on the photography side, but yes, video has never been, I think, what they're really trying to kind of build into.
Yes. And that is actually why I bought myself an A7S II in December 2015. And, you know, I was honestly hoping to see an A7S III in October/November soon. 2017. Also because the GH5 is out from pretty much a year and a half. And, you know, it is providing 10-bit color and 4K 60 frames. And being a gear person and shooting always in 4K, I mean,
and
I was
no overheating and unlimited recording time and dual SD slots and good battery. I could go on and on about that
definitely. So I wanted that 60 frames per second. That is like my major, you know, thing. And honestly, I was, you know, thinking about getting a GH5 just for this season, but I think I'm not brave enough. Like, you know how it is. Sony is obviously going to release, at least I hope so, an A7S III at Photokina. I mean, but, you know, Photokina is pretty much in September, like October. I don't actually remember, but it is going to be after the season, like the big boom of the wedding season. So having, you know, other people in the industry like coming out with 4K 60 frames, I'm like, huh. I mean, when I do have, when I need to do slow motion, I use the 120 frames per second. It is not really good. I mean, especially shooting in S-Log 3, it is not looking that good. And I just don't like to see a very good quality in 4K jumping to full HD, a crappy full HD.
Yeah, when you get really used to the beauty of 4K, it is hard to shoot anything else at all.
Yes.
Like people, I used to think, 4K is not really that. I mean, I'm fine with 1080 until you shoot 4K.
Exactly.
And then you look at 1080 and you're like, I'd rather just not even hit record.
Exactly.
Like and it's not even necessarily about delivering in 4K, but I also look at it as if I shoot everything in 4K, regardless whether I export it or not. I like it for the sake of knowing that another 5 to 8 years, it'll still at least look pretty good.
Exactly.
I think that obviously in 2 years, we'll be shooting everything in 6K and 8K. And at this point in 2018, I feel like it's just kind of a silly thing to not be shooting in 4K just because of where we're going with technology. But Canon, you know, is slow to that race all the time when it comes to what they're doing with their smaller cameras. I mean, I think that it's just hard. If you try to keep up with these companies and try to understand what they're doing, it's really hard to predict. Panasonic and Sony, at least, I think are both companies that realize there's huge potential and they're going all in with releasing stuff that just is super affordable. I mean, the A7 III is a phenomenal little camera for being $2,000. The A7S III will no doubt be really good. It'll be interesting to see what they do with it and then how quick Panasonic decides to do something with the GH6 and see what happens from there. But I just love tech. I love seeing what I love the competition because the more and more people release things, the cheaper that they have to start making it because competition's there. And it only helps us filmmakers get incredible gear for ridiculously cheap prices.
And, you know, let's talk about competition. I mean, we started talking because of this, because I asked you a question. Let's reverse roles here. I think people starting out and people, you know, still in the industry like me after a couple of years are wondering and looking around for, you know, competitors. And, you know, something that is in everyone's mind, in my opinion, is how to deal with competition.
Here's how I deal with competition. I pay no attention to it. I couldn't even tell you what other companies in my area do, what they charge, who are kind of the go-to that other companies are using. I just pay no attention to it. If a competitor came up to me tomorrow and asked me for advice on how to do something or how to use this or what I think of this, I would give them the same advice I give to everyone on YouTube. Like I kind of feel like in my head, part of it is just confidence in not just what I'm doing on a video perspective, because I don't think I'm the best cinematographer in the world, but I think that I'm very good at the business side and the getting of the work side of it, that I just feel like if you are someone that's really, really, really worried about competition, it usually roots the fact that you're not super, super confident in what you're actually doing. And the more and more that you're worried about somebody overtaking you is more just actually showing that you're confident that someone can bypass you. Where I look at it and say, if I'm as good as I think I am in terms of as a whole package, not just cinematography, but the selling, the pricing, the everything that I do, and most of all the experience that a customer gets, I could teach you how to do every single thing that I do, and I still feel like I'll win if I ultimately know that there's something unique about just how I can have conversations with people. When you're starting out, maybe it's important to look at some competition just to get a feel for like what you should charge or what people are charging in your area and all that. But I really don't think that you should overthink it, because when you think too much about what everybody else is doing, you start to change what you, who you are and who your company is as a whole to try to fit the mold of what everybody else is doing. And to me, the way that you are going to win is there's not another Sarah Canducci in Italy or the United States, or I mean, there may be another person with that name. Maybe there is. But the whole point is there's not another you. So for you to look at competition and try to blend in, even with someone that's doing it well, like no one can be you. Be you and be you really good. Know what your strengths are. The self-awareness is so huge, to understanding what makes you incredible, what makes your company incredible, and go all in on that. And just who cares about everyone else? Like,
actually, you know, my friend Cynthia always says that, you know, comparison is a joy killer. That's just what it is.
Yeah, comparison, that's, I like that. Comparison is the ultimate joy killer, because it is. If you're comparing your video work to somebody better, you're going to be disappointed, and vice versa. So last thing I want to ask, because I like to know what people are doing. So are you still a Premiere editor?
I started with Premiere, but you know, when, you know, I jumped into the A7S2 world and I jump into color grading and S-Log3 and 4K, I saw that my MacBook Pro wasn't, you know, keeping up with the entire thing. So I was really worried, because, you know, I was like, but my Mac is new. I just don't want to change it. I don't need an iMac. So I just like to have my MacBook Pro as the main machine. And as you do, Scott, just being able to use an external monitor and to move around. And that is so, so cool. I mean, you can also travel with your MacBook Pro. And I was like, I just don't want to, you know, buy an iMac just for that. And that is actually how a friend that actually works in an Apple store was like, Sarah, have you ever tried Final Cut? And I was like, but I don't really like Final Cut. I mean, it is like a quote-unquote professional iMovie. I just don't get how it works and stuff like that. But, you know, it was pretty much around my birthday in 2016. Yes. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to buy myself Final Cut Pro for my birthday, and I'm going to try to make it work. So I tried that, and I saw that, you know, the video quality was very good, and you know, it was editing like in a very good way 4K footage, and I was like, this may be a great option, you know. Right. So I was like, okay, I know, my mind still thinks with the Premiere mindset, but you know, this is my only option. As I learned in, you know, many times, difficult times in life, the only thing that really makes your brain work in a different way is to be forced and really motivated to do something.
Right.
So yep. I never, you know, it is like with English. Like, I never been the greatest, you know, English learner, but when I decided to move to the US, I was like, I have to learn English in a good way. So I did not end up in the US, but I learned English.
It's a mindset. When you get into a place that you realize like you have to do it,
yes,
you can learn it. Yes. And I just think, I think it's important from an editing perspective to just try different things. If you're, especially if you're a Mac user, to try both of them, because I think that it's just, there, it's not that there's anything wrong with Premiere. I still use it for certain projects, but I think that a lot of people have opinions on things that they don't try, and that's not a good mindset to be in either.
Yeah.
It's always good to at least try something before you say that it's no good, because you never know what's on the other side. Well, I really appreciate you hopping on. I'm going to make sure I put all your links down below in the show notes and all those different places that you listen to this podcast. But definitely check out Sarah's channel if you're listening to this. She's doing some awesome work. I wish there were some English subtitles, because I don't really have a clue what you're saying in any of them. But I think that you're doing an awesome job, because I see just the video and that looks great.
Thank you.
So keep it up. And I really, really appreciate you've been watching my channel for a little bit, which is awesome to have you on. But you're also doing the same thing I do, which is super cool. Just creators, other creators inspire me a lot too, to just constantly think outside the box. And it's good to watch some other people, because it helps you kind of just get re-energized and look at things differently and say, I never thought about it that way. That's a cool way to approach it. And So I appreciate what you're doing as well. But I do appreciate you taking some time. It's now like bedtime in your area. So get to bed, have a good evening. And I appreciate you being on the podcast, and we'll catch up very soon.
Thank you so much, Scott, for having me.